Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Well, my first this morning, I'm joined now in studio by Eamon Ryan, Minister for Transport, Climate, Environment and Communications, also the Green Party leader. Good morning to you, Minister. Look, as we've heard this morning, Airgrid, the operator of the National Grid, has announced the results of the country's very first auction for the generation of electricity from offshore wind farms. Words like breakthrough, revolution, landmark being discussed in relation to it. But is this the first time that we have priced, we've put a value, we know exactly the value of our offshore wind capacity?
Yes, for the next 20 years. And that gives us real strength. We have to go through the planning system, obviously. But that low-cost power that can provide today relatively about a third of our power is very significant. But it's also significant in the sense we're going to go further. We will start a second auction later this year, and we will go on following the same next year. And as we start to head into southern waters and into western waters, the scale of our opportunity here is beyond compare to firstly meet our own needs. And that lower cost is important, so we kind of it's affordable to Irish consumers, but then also that we can use that power to create new industries and new jobs and export some of the excess power we will have, because particularly as you head south and west, the scale of the resource is huge. It's our sea area is seven times our land area. It's one of the windiest places in the planet. And as that wind speeds go up, even marginally, every percentage point you go up in the wind speed, you actually see a huge increase in productivity of these turbines. So we can expect now what this is a very significant vote of confidence, I think, and it's a statement of confidence for the country that we know we have a power supply that we can turn to, that can be affordable, that is clean, and that is secure. And that's why it's a really significant day.
So talk to me about the price and less gas is the price, right? Because obviously the context is in the midst of an unprecedented energy and inflation crisis. €86 per megawatt hour of energy. What's it at present and what's that going to mean to consumers over time?
Well, over the last year, and this has been an exceptional year, very high prices, but the average price of the last year is some €200 a megawatt hour. So it's half that. It is a set price. There is a certain flexibility to account for inflation in the construction period or before they go to construction and in the operation and maintenance after that. But most of the price, two thirds of it, is fixed. So we know that's the same price for the next 20 years. And that's what's really significant. Even if there's high inflation, the price still stays steady. There's been a lot of talk in the papers and elsewhere.
Is that just looking at it? Because essentially it's a contract for difference. If the market price is below what the auction price is, this 86, the government has to pay the companies. If it's above that, you get paid back. Is that going to be a significant cost for the taxpayer in the future if that fluctuates wildly?
No, because as I said, it is a fixed price. It is a price that within our market will really benefit Irish consumers. It's a market price which is not affected by the price of carbon or the price of gas internationally or any other factor. It's something we have control over, and it gives us real confidence that we can not just for consumers, but also for businesses to be able to say, well, in this country, we know we have this price for the next 20 years. And that's the sort of time frame a lot of investment decisions are made.
And when we look across our closest neighbours to the UK, they've had four auctions so far, and every time the price has come down. We're already, even at this 86, we're going to be above the European average, and we're certainly above the UK. How far are we going to see those prices fall in the future?
I think you have to be careful about some of those reports and newspapers around this, because it's complex, because comparing with like, some of those European prices might be 100% index linked. The UK price, you have to actually add on transmission costs and going back to 10 years, other inflation pressures. But the main reason I think it's a good price, I was at an offshore wind conference in France for the last 2 days. And talking to the industry there, they recognise the actual cost of the materials, cost of steel, cost of the components has gone up about 40% in the last 2 years. And that's why you have to be careful comparing like with like. So in
but this
that
is fixed for the next 20 years.
Yeah. And in those circumstances, it is, in my mind, a very good price. Talking to the industry, talking to energy experts, people with the real knowledge and understanding of the area, I think most yesterday were saying, yeah, that's actually,
but
we've actually delivered.
Again, we'll borrow from our neighbours. Scotland last year, one of the bids came in as low as 34 euro and 22 cents.
Yeah, but you've got to then index back to 2012, and you've got to include other costs, transmission costs and so on. So you have to be careful comparing like with like. But from the Irish market, where we are paying high electricity prices because of our reliance on fossil fuels, this is significant because this break takes us away from that, gives us the potential to have an alternative supply. So we're not at the behest of Putin or any other distant regime in terms of what our energy security and future and price is.
In terms of, I suppose, look, what everybody at home and every listener is going to just want to know is, when are our prices going to come down? If you say that this is right, because others might say, well, look, are we paying this 86? Is that the price we are paying for being laggards in terms of getting our, tapping our offshore wind capacity?
Our prices are high for two or three reasons. The main ones are because of our dependence on imported fossil fuels. Half of our electricity at the moment comes from burning gas, and that's very expensive. Secondly, we have a very distributed network. We have a very dispersed population system. You have to get wires to every single house, and we're unique in Europe in that sort of the level of dispersed kind of housing that we have. So they're the main reasons. The price of electricity has been very high because of the price of gas. The companies do purchase forward gas almost a year and a half in advance. So it'll take some time to bring that, to see that price coming down as the prices have fallen in the wholesale gas markets. This onshore renewables, so this offshore renewables will start coming into the Irish market in maybe the end of 26, 27, that sort of period, 28. Each project will have a slightly different timeline. It will then have a significant impact in helping to kind of phase us away from that large reliance on gas. It will bring down the price of electricity. And we are keeping pressure, talking to all the companies to make sure that in the interim period, we do everything to try and reduce the price. The bills are still very high for consumers.
And the bills, obviously, just even, look, when anybody who's even trying to renovate their home at the minute will know that the estimates coming in, the cost of inflation is impacting on everything. How secure, again, is that 86 euro per megawatt hour in the context of the inflation crisis, but just more broadly, given that perhaps we don't have a great record in large infrastructural projects?
Well, I think, can I go back to the foundation of the state? And this is equivalent. Like, this is equivalent. This is our
Ard na Cruithe.
This is Ard na Cruithe take two. Because at that time, we invested quarter of our GDP in a single amazing hydroelectric system, which is still working today. Those same turbines that were put in 100 years ago are still turning today, even as we speak, probably working. So we can, and we are good at this. This is a 9 billion euro investment. It's not a small one, and it's the first of a series of investments. As I said, we'll go to another auction early next year and one the year after. So this is going to be the more regular, certain, and we can and will be good at this. We are good at renewable energy. Like, we are one of the countries in Europe, we're probably in the top three in integrating renewable power. We have a large volume of wind, about 40%. And last 2 weeks, for the first time, we're starting to see solar take hold. It was providing some 10% of power on a sunny afternoon 2 weeks ago. So when you add onshore wind, and we will build more of that, but there is limits because of planning constraints, if you add that to solar and to offshore wind and build interconnection with France and the UK, that gives us the system which where we can balance and you put batteries and other storage systems in place. What this figure yesterday shows is we have a viable, secure way to an energy future. And when you have that, you have a very strong country.
Well, look, they're obviously very, very ambitious, and those targets to get 80% of our energy, just even were in Lynch last night, the economist at the ASRI saying that this was a very unbelievably, I think it was the phrase used, an unbelievably ambitious target. Before I go on to issues of planning, what proportion of that 80% will be provided by these offshore wind farms?
By the end of this decade, we expect to have, I think it's about 8 or 9 gigawatts of onshore wind, about 8 gigawatts of solar and something like 7 gigawatts of offshore. So it's roughly one third, one third, one third. The advantage of the offshore is that it's very high capacity. And we as a country, it was a friend of mine, Brendan Halligan, you remember Brendan, former senator, he said, we need to turn our comparative competitive advantage in wind into this new industry for the country. In the same way that we turned our comparative advantage in growing grass into a food industry, Kerrygold and all the other, it's a similar thing. If you talked at this conference I was at with all the leading industry people across Europe, they acknowledged that what we have in higher wind speeds, we just happen to be in a very windy part of the world, that advantage is real. That's not going to go away. That's a physical reality.
Well, the vision is compelling, but I think perhaps people might be skeptical about the implementation. One issue you raised there was planning. You're talking about these wind farms coming on stream possibly by 2030. You said earlier there, possibly 28, 27. When we look at the resourcing and other issues facing bodies such as Ombord Pleanála and the Environmental Protection Agency, are you worried that these projects, like others, are going to get bogged down in planning?
Well, we can't afford that not only in the energy sector, but in the transport and housing. We do have to improve and quicken our planning system. But I have trust in it, and we are resourcing it now. There's a separate new unit going into the planning in Ombord Pleanála for this marine planning area.
Why has it not been set up? This is the Maritime Area Regulatory Authority. Why was it not set up before this big announcement and those contracts for difference being issued?
It has been set up.
Is it fully operational to deal with these issues?
There's now 15 board members back in Ombord Pleanála. That was one of the real problems, that we had under-resourced Ombord Pleanála, and that has changed. The environmental planning aspect of this is probably the most critical, and that's not easy, but we will get that right. We have a lot of experience to learn from the UK, where they, and indeed everyone else is doing this, Germany, Belgium, Holland. What they're finding is you can't completely rule out environmental risk. It's not that you can say absolutely no impact, but you try and mitigate, and you look at the benefit of the low carbon, the transition that we get in the assessment. And Ombord Pleanála will do that. The European Commission will assist us in that. So, yes, the reason we
But on that, the risk, because obviously environmental impact assessment will be critical. Will it be the companies themselves, these wind farm companies, carrying out that and submitting their views on it? Or will there be an independent environmental impact assessment in circumstances where, you know, this technology is still, you know, it's relatively new and we don't yet know perhaps the full impact on life and biodiversity?
There's increasing analysis coming. There's a recent Scottish report showing that there wasn't actually the level of impact on the environment. Now, there's scientific assessments has to be done. The reason you have Ombord Pleanála as an independent body is that so you do that at arm's length and they assess all the various reports. But one thing is, when you said about, you know, this may be ambitious or is it real?
Unbelievably ambitious,
correctly ambitious in my mind. Because, yeah, the world's burning. We need to act fast and we need to think big. And we are, and we will, and we will deliver. 85% of the new electricity generation in the world last year was renewables. That's not going to turn around any which way. It's going to be wind and solar that powers the world because it's cheaper, it's ubiquitous, it exists in every single country, and the technology is developing. These turbines are very large, they're very complex, but I was at one of the factories making them, as I said yesterday, and that's where everyone's investing. And we have the advantage, as I said, of being able to take that technology that's been developed in other countries, bring it here. We will create a lot of jobs in this in our ports. There's real potential for foreign direct investment here in the background.
We're going to have to scale up to receive all of that.
Firstly, in the deployment of the turbines going out, but then looking at what you do with the power when it comes back in. Because countries which have access to this low carbon power, like Ireland, which have also access to a steady, secure water supply, which is going to be a real issue in a climate-changing world, and which also has a reputation, rightly earned, of having a high-class industrial workforce, there you've got the ingredients to actually maintain a secure economy for our people into the future.
You mentioned the scale of some of these developments are going to be on the east and west coast, mostly the east coast, Kish and the Bray Banks, Greystones to Wicklow off Skerries. How do you respond to criticisms from people who just say the scale of them? Like, I mean, 10 times the height of Kish Lighthouse, which I get to see every day from where I live. Like, I mean, they're absolutely massive. Will people, do you think, object to them as they have in other countries as unsightly, that they're going to risk compromising our coastal landscape, which is a huge part of our tourism offering?
Some people will, and we listen to that. Obviously, you listen to all different stakeholders. I think a lot of people would say that, yes, while they're very large, the distance
on... 10 times the size of Kish, they're huge.
Yeah, but the distance on the horizon means it's not dominating. I suppose maybe I'd cite an example. I don't know if you ever go down to British, Darla, but my kind of place growing up is kids going on holidays. And it doesn't impact me when I look out from British and see the turbines, which are already there. We have to be mindful of this. The final details in terms of where the turbines go or how many turbines will be a subject for the planning application. The designated areas that they have now give some flexibility in terms of where they're located. That's why you have an independent planning system to let that work through. But
and how significant, you know, when you consider Shell to see, you consider other projects, how are we going to engage with communities that are going to be directly impacted by this?
We're already doing it. I've been to a number of the consultation events that we've been organising where we're listening to local communities, listening to local fishing communities, listening to shipping companies and others with an interest in how we manage our sea. So that's the best way of doing it, is listening. There was a study done by the EPA.
But will those communities be compensated for the impacts?
Even before the production starts, we'll have some 25 million a year per annum community benefit fund, which will help, support local communities. But can I say, I was just saying there, we've done a major study, or the EPA rather, done a major study on what is the attitude of the Irish people towards us tackling climate change. It was a very major study. Only 3 or 4% were what you might call climate deniers. Say, we don't believe in it, don't think we should do anything about it. Vast majority, 80%+, wanted to see action. I wanted to be part of the action.
They might want it in their backyard, though.
No, but nah. It has to be one of the, it's going to be everywhere. Every place matters. There's going to be changes in our country, in transport, in energy, in agriculture, in forestry. So it will change the way we do things right across the country. It'll only work if it's changed for the better. And it has to be with listening and adapting and not being kind of categoric in terms of how we do development. But I actually think, and the interesting thing, the very high percentage of people in Ireland who are interested in acting, it doesn't vary between rural and urban. It doesn't vary between young and old. And yes, in the likes of South Dublin, which is my own constituency, Dublin Bay South, we will be able to see these turbines in the same way that people in Donegal can see turbines at the moment, in the same way that people in Kerry can see them. And we have to be careful on the planning of that so we don't, in any one county, isn't overloaded.
And what about our fishing communities who have expressed concern, including yesterday when the announcement was unveiled about the impact on fishing grounds? Do we know enough yet, particularly on fish, marine life and birds?
A lot of the assessment is when you put in these are fixed turbines, so they're not, the new technology would probably be floating as we go into the west where there's deeper waters. But on the east coast and the south coast, it'll be where you have a steel tube which is fixed on, usually using a concrete base under the at the seabed. Actually, the building of those structures often creates a reef-type characteristic that sees fishing numbers return, or the number. It actually creates a marine-rich environment. We're again sitting down with all the various different fishing organisations, working in a collaborative way, because you do have to, you know, bring people with you, and they have a role. One of the things I think one of the big critical things we will need is a whole generation of new young Irish people who are skilled in marine, in shipping, in actually maintenance and operation. The ports along our east coast, starting with the east coast in Arklow, in Wicklow, in Greystones, in up around
there could be opportunities.
There's huge opportunities, Greenore and beyond.
You know, in one sense, maybe we look back in 20 years' time and say this was Ard na Cruach round two. But at the moment, we are still paying very, very high energy bill prices. Gas is still going to be a huge part of the future because is it the wind turbines? I think there's an assumption of, is it 45% of the operating time? You know, we're still paying very, very high energy bills. So when are we going to see those fall? And are we going to have an energy rebate, particularly given the high prices and the amount of people who are in arrears?
We look at that in the budget. And I think the budget is the right place to do it because in the budget...
Budget's a good bit out. People, there's 23% of people who
Yeah, but we have just, I mean, there's just been a significant increase in social welfare. Again, further increase in social welfare agreed in last year's budget. It was only last month that we paid the latest of the 200 euros electricity credits that had a really significant benefit in terms of helping households get out of arrears. Now, we're constantly looking at this. No one should be complacent. This is still a very high energy period because of those high prices of gas in the international markets. So,
and even if they do fall, Minister, even if they do fall later this year, we're not going to back to pre-crisis levels.
No,
so this is a persistently high level of energy costs.
And that's why the rollout of renewables is critical. And it won't just be these big offshore projects. Like this summer, we're going to start to see hundreds, if not thousands, of Irish schools starting to put solar panels on the roof, supported by the government. And we are seeing an incredible takeoff in the use of those solar panels on people's houses, which is a really good way of cutting your bills by about 30%. If you talk to the companies in that business, it's just taking off. So, and also the first quarter figures for renovating people's homes, 10,000 homes in the first quarter. Now we did...
Of course, there's an affordability issue there because obviously those who probably need it the most
might
have the ability to retrofit.
But that's why 55% of the money from the carbon tax goes to those warmer homes that people who can't afford to do it, we provide 100% grant. And so we can do this. We can. It's going to be difficult because, as you say, there's no immediate sign of the energy, the international prices coming down back to the pre-war levels. They're lower than the extremes of last year.
Yeah, they're going to stay persistently high. And I think everybody at home is just going to be sitting there just going, when are our bills going to come down? You know, if this is such a breakthrough. Can I bring you to something not related to offshore wind, but private car use? Last March, there was, you know, a huge story that you'd taken a memo to Cabinet on this sort of radical strategy to reduce our private car use. For congestion charges, higher parking fees. Whatever happened to your memo? Did you get beaten back on that?
No, we got it through government and we're now starting to deliver. The Dublin City Council just announced in recent days the plans for taking private cars out of College Green as an example. And that's only one of the measures we'll need to make in Dublin City Centre and indeed in our other cities and towns around the country.
So this would be the 10% daily charge for cities?
There's no charge. It's an allocation of space. I don't think...
well, if you're paying
for that... reallocation of space. Like, I don't think we can... If we try this transition as a blaming, shaming, pricing people out of something, that won't work.
Well, a 400% increase in parking charges, that's going to be some deterrent.
Yeah, but not the introduction of big congestion charges or road tolls or that sort of way of changing the way our traffic system works. We need to do this.
So are congestion charges coming in or not? Because I know obviously last month Leo Varadkar told the Dáil that it wouldn't introduce congestion charges.
We're not going to use that as the mechanism because the prices increase you'd need to do in my mind are so high that they wouldn't be justified. You couldn't on a social justice basis, you'd be forcing people into really high prices that far better us to use what can often be done quite quickly. Some of the sort of road space reallocation, the sort of thing we did during COVID, we can bring back and do again, where we make sure that we provide space for the buses to get through very quickly, for there to be a safe place to walk and cycle. And that we have about 35 Pathfinder projects right across this country where we're looking in the next, by the end of 2025, in the next 2 years, two and a half years, to make those sort of really radical, quick changes to make a safe space to improve public transport, improve walking and cycling.
But you were a supporter of them. Do you think, have you ruled them out completely or do you see them in the future a possible feature?
In the future, but I don't think they're a first response. I think, and I don't think it's the fundamental correct approach. I think what we need to do is make sure the public transport offering is better. And that's happening. We're rolling out a new rural bus service every week and the public are responding. We've seen the figures for the uptake by young people of the youth travel cards. 250,000 young people have taken that.
And just very quickly, Minister, just before I let you go, older renters, we had Micheline Walsh on the programme earlier this week. Do you think lifting the eviction ban was a serious mistake on the part of the government, particularly looking at news reports this morning that landlords don't want older people that they feel they'll be stuck with for years because of new changes in legislation? For everyone it's difficult, but for older renters now, becoming a huge problem.
Yeah, and as I said, our interest, just like everyone else, is in making sure that they are protected and find alternatives. And we do have new housing solutions. But the government decision, I believe, was the correct one, allied to a whole range of other different initiatives to make sure that there is a safety net and we start to ramp out And provide new housing solutions.
So new energy, lower energy prices in the way, but not just yet. It could take a little while. Eamon Ryan, Minister for Transport, Climate, Environment and Communications, Green Party leader, thank you for coming into studio. Coming up after the break, we'll hear what impact the devastating earthquake last February could have on this weekend's elections in Turkey.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.